Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why is our inner child so important, even as adults, to pay attention to?
I don't think we realize how impacted we are by our young experiences, right? And so the little girls that live inside of us, I'm really trying to help people sort of brush off the debris of the experiences that they've had, or the things that they really needed but were not attended to, and then who is that person, and trying to get back in touch with that little one, and how do we take care of her, right, today as adults, and heals any old wounds that are still present. And so, like, getting back in touch with her, and what was she about, and what did she miss, but also who was she, and how can we bring that more forward?
Welcome to a new episode of Healed Girl Era Podcast with me, Gia Peppers. In this episode, we are focusing on inner child healing with marriage and family therapist Heather Primus. We met last year at a conference, and by the end of her session, there wasn't a dry eye in the room because of the powerful ways she led us in reconnecting to our inner child. So, you know, I had to have her on here. Join us as she helps us explore our emotional inheritances, starting our inner child healing, reparenting, and more. Come get these tools, y'all. Healed Girl Era, the podcast, starts now.
You know, we are all about honoring the eras of our lives and sharing the lessons that we learned to get through them, in hopes that we can all heal together, one story at a time. So sometimes we have our great storytellers, our public figures, the women who inspire us to heal. And other episodes, we have our therapists, our psychotherapists, and people who can help us heal with real tangible tools. And today we are working on the inner girl that exists within every single one of us. And I got to meet this beautiful person that's going to be with me in conversation, Heather Primus, in an amazing setting, Leading Women Define, Rising Leaders. And she was just able to make us remember the versions of ourselves that led us to who we are today and the work that it takes to really bring those girls along the way. And so help me welcome Heather Primus to our show.
Hi, Gia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I am so happy to be here with you in this moment. And I, before we start, always want to lead with a word of prayer. So you want
to
pray with me?
I would love to pray with you.
Okay, here we go.
Yes.
Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this opportunity to fellowship. Thank you so much for Heather Primus and her work. Thank you so much for the power of healing today. Just open up this space. Let it be a beautiful conversation about the baby versions of who you made us as and how we can make sure that those versions come with us as we become more of who you are calling us to be. Let it be transparent. Let it be impactful for a person, any person that is watching this show. Thank you, God, for the opportunity to be here. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. And amen. So it is.
And so it is.
And so it is.
Now, I want to make sure that I get your title right. Okay. So you, I know you are a psychotherapist, but tell me a little bit about the work that you do.
So the work that I do is primarily with women. I'm particularly, I say, attuned to Black women, women of color, and I work with children and families. So I sort of think of myself as someone who works with all parts of the family. And so, yeah, I'm in private practice, and that's the basis of my clients.
I love that. Yeah. And what made you want to get into this work?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I mean, I think my undergraduate schooling was in English, and I'll be honest with you, that came about because I didn't know what I want to do. And my mother told me, look, everybody needs to know how to write. And that's how I got to that. And then I was working in, I guess, tangentially in entertainment. I was a wardrobe stylist for a while.
No wonder you have such chic style.
Oh, thank you. Yes. So I did that for a good bit. And then I decided I wanted to go back to school. And when I went back to school, psychology was really the thing that felt like it was calling me. I'd always been, why do people do what they do?
Yeah.
So that was always something that really interested me. I was curious about that. And then I went back to school. And not too long after I finished my program, my husband and I had our first child. And I ended up taking a good long break because as a new mother, I just didn't have the emotional bandwidth to be attentive to my child the way that I wanted to be, and then also be with clients in a way that I felt like I wanted to show up for them. And so I took a good break, and then I returned to it, and then that was kind of my route to it. Yeah,
I love that. I think it's so amazing that we fall in love with the how and the why of people, and like even myself coming into journalism, I was always obsessed with the stories behind my favorite creatives, my favorite singers, dancers. Like I had the J14 magazines and Word Up and all that. Like I was like, what is Aaliyah doing? What is Destiny's Child doing? And how did they get here?
Yeah.
And I love that those two sides of the coin lead us to this moment here, because it's still all about, doesn't matter what title you have, everything is about how you do what you do. And if you can't like get to the moment and be well, it really does shape and change the perspective of the entire moment. And so I try 100%. To like remind myself when I'm out of alignment and overwhelmed or feeling a little frustrated with life, I'm like, okay, what's really happening here? What's going on with me? And that led me to my inner girl work, my inner child work. And one of my favorite moments of our Leading Women Define Rising Leaders Summit was just you took us back to the little girl versions of who we were. And it made me just check back in with me before the nose, me before anything in this industry, like tried to shape who I am, and even me before heartbreak and, you know, personal life, my family, little things, disappointments.
Sure.
And so let's get into the inner girl work.
Okay, let's do it.
Why is our inner child so important, even as adults, to pay attention to?
Yeah. So first, let me acknowledge what you said about you paying attention to what was going on with you. Yeah. And I'm so glad that that is starting to become something that people are curious about.
Yes.
So, you know, the topic that I shared at Leading Women Defined is emotional inheritance. And it's such a important topic to me because I don't think we realize how impacted we are by our young experiences, right? And so the little girls that live inside of us, I'm really trying to help people sort of brush off the debris of the experiences that they've had. Yeah, the experiences that they've had or the things that they really needed but were not attended to. And then who is that person and trying to get back in touch with that little one. Mm. And how do we take care of her, right, today as adults and heals any old wounds that are still present. And so, like, getting back in touch with her and what was she about and what did she miss, but also who was she and how can we bring that more forward?
I love that. Yeah. I think we often forget about the smaller versions of us because, excuse me, because society, well, you can't be little forever. I mean, you grow up, right? And then, you know, people are like, you just got to grow up. I mean, you just got to do what you do. You got to grow up. But parts of us get compartmentalized for survival in many ways. Mm-hmm. How does compartmentalizing who we are or who we were as little girls affect how we move as adults? And if you want to give an example, or maybe like, you know, if you didn't have this certain attention from, you know, the people in your life, it might lead to this type of behavior. Like, how are those how are those behaviors that we learned early on still connected to the behaviors that might show up in our adult life?
Sure. So I'd love to give you a couple examples. I like to start, though, by first acknowledging that our grandparents and our parents and our caregivers, like, it's never meant to be an indictment of them, right? Because presumably everybody is doing the best that they can with what they've got. And so when we look back and try to reflect and see those, you know, those old hurts or disappointments or ways that we were led or raised, we're looking for information and not blame, right? So I like to start there, right? Because I'm going to mess up. I'm a parent. I've got two kids and I know this stuff. I talk about this stuff. And literally last night I told my daughter, I'm so sorry I didn't do that very well. Right. So
it's amazing that you do that in real time.
Yeah. So it happens, right? We're not aiming for perfection, but just like more awareness. And so we think about little ones. I use myself. I try to be vulnerable first if I'm going to ask you to be, right? Yes. So I like to talk a lot about how I was raised by my father, and he was a loving person and a amazing provider. But also very impatient, quick to temper, and really didn't have a lot of room for mistakes. And so I grew up in my little body, right, really trying to avoid that. And so when you talk about compartmentalizing, the part of me that wants to try new things and be adventurous and kind of be okay with however things unfold, right, and that sort of light side of me, I put that away because the risk of making mistakes was just too big. I did not want to experience his disappointment or disapproval or his temper. And so I put that to the side and I just moved very lightly and very intentionally. And I just moved aside those parts where I could put myself in situations where I might make a mistake. So I play safe. And so that's how it shows up for me, how it has showed up for me in my adult life. And so I have to stay really mindful when I get that anxiety feeling when I, you know, talk myself out of something, I have to really stay aware that that's my little girl trying to keep me safe, which is her job, yes. Right? And how can I step into that and know that it could be scary, but it could also be wonderful. Mm. And, you know, that's an example of how that can show up in your adulthood.
I love that. Thank you for that example from your life and being vulnerable with that. And I might as well jump into, I love that you started with that. This isn't an indictment on our parents. I'm very protective of like my family, my parents. And I absolutely loved my upbringing, like to the point where like, if it's up to me, God, if he puts it together, I would love to raise my kids, you know, in the area that I grew up in, like still really, you know, the DMV means a lot to me, but even just like the community, the tribe we have there, my family is important to me. And so, you know, this is not an indictment. Okay. Yes. If you're watching this, nosy people. But I do, you know, remember, I talked about this a lot on this show. I'm the oldest of three. Mm. And my little girl, it's wild that I chose a career in entertainment, but my little girl, probably not, my version, little girl version, often felt overlooked. And, you know, that I felt very lonely sometimes in my childhood. And I also felt like my mom and dad told me when my brother and sister came home, I was like, you can take them back now. Thank you so much.
Right, right.
Like, I don't know
Oh,
them.
Wait, they're staying?
They're mine. Right. Like, I was not the girl that asked for siblings.
Yes.
20, 30 years later, they are my best friends in the world. But when we first met, I was like, I don't know what they're doing here. This is my home.
Sure.
That always makes me think about, you know, now when my little girl probably is the loudest when I feel overlooked and when I feel alone or I feel like I wasn't invited, like within certain friend groups.
Yeah.
And so I've learned to like really sit in the mirror with her and be like, hey, all right. Like I understand you feel alone and I don't want to dismiss you, but I want you to understand that like it's okay that you are still safe here. You're still fine. Like it's okay. You're not going to be alone the rest of your life. This is just one moment. If you want to call it out, say, hey, I really want to be invited to this next time if it's possible. That doesn't really go so well. Like, I've done it before, and I usually am just like if somebody wants you to be there, they're going to ask you to be there.
How do you feel when you sort of advocate for yourself?
Yes. In those situations, it feels scary. Like, I definitely, it takes me days to send the text. Like, it takes me a while, but I have learned that if I don't, I snap where like it's not like it's like things lead up and not snap in an angry way, snap in like I'll block you. Like we're just no longer talking. Like you're just out of my life.
Sure.
And people are like, well dang, where did that come from? Sure. I thought we were cool. Like you didn't say anything. So I'm learning now to advocate for myself in real time. it has looked like usually an understanding on the other end of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Recently when I moved out to this part, West Coast, you know, I really felt alone out here. And so I did let some of my friends know. And they were very receptive, but also just like, I'm going through things too.
Sure.
So I had to, it really made me step back and be like, hey, this isn't all about you. But what does come up is like that feeling of being overlooked and feeling like no one sees you sometimes. And you
left
work
out.
So hard, left out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what comes up. Left out.
Yeah. And so I really appreciate like you letting her have a voice.
Yeah.
Right. Because so when we're little, oftentimes we don't have a voice.
Right.
I told a friend of mine, when we're going somewhere, my kids are like, where are we going? What time are we leaving? Do you know how many times I've gotten in a car and had absolutely no idea where I was headed? My parents are, get in the car, we're leaving. You know what I mean? And so I think we didn't have a lot of voice.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of room and time for us to, how are you feeling about that? You know, take your parents taking their time. And so you just giving some space to her to explore and investigate, what's this about? Mm. What am I feeling? What, like, that's the work, right? We don't sort of arrive at healing, but what we do is we show up for ourselves.
Yeah.
We take the time that we need to sort of process what's going on, and then we can make choices around how we want to move forward. So sometimes it looks like, okay, I'm just feeling really lonely today. Sometimes it means, hey, could you come over?
Yes.
I'm just feeling by myself today. Could you just sit with me and have a glass of wine,
yes,
or something like that? And then other times it is, wow, that really didn't feel okay with me. I want to call you about that,
yeah,
and speak up and advocate for myself.
Yeah.
Right?
And I love that. Like, that is the part of the work that I've learned to be more familiar with. I love, mm-hmm, that you said, like, healing isn't something that we arrive at.
Yeah.
And even when I think about the title of this podcast, it was kind of like an affirmation that healing is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the healed version of ourselves is just more aware and more active in our lives, in our thoughts, in,
yes,
our patterns. And so I just love that we even talk about the work part of it. But when we think about the work in terms of those other three moments that you just talked about,
mm-hmm,
what are some tools that if a person is listening to this for the first time and,
yeah,
is like, okay, maybe that is a little girl version of me, like, what are some ways that they could start their inner child healing, inner child work?
Sure.
Where do you start at, like, in the beginning processes? And then, like, we'll talk about the work of that.
Sure. So a couple of tools that I like to offer sort of as you start the work or in the process is, and let me say, there was something that you said that made me want to say something. It'll come back to me.
It'll come back to me.
But so as I shared at the talk that, mm-hmm, we were together with not so long ago, was really getting in touch with and building a relationship with your body.
Ah.
So I love to say that the body remembers what the mind will forget.
Mm.
And so really starting to pay attention to your body, because those places where you're feeling anxious or you're feeling sad or you are, well, sad's more of an emotion, but where you're feeling anxious, mm-hmm, where there's tightness, where you can feel agitation, where you can feel your breath gets more rapid,
yeah,
that's your body's alert system for you. So it's saying something to pay attention to here, mm-hmm, something we need to know here. And so instead of dismissing that or not really understanding what its value is, to get in alignment with your body a, mm, lot more, right? So listening for that piece of it. And then I think the feelings, like you were saying, that left out feeling, that alone feeling, that's all information.
Mm.
And so I think we're so busy,
yeah,
and there's often not a lot of validation around feelings, or there's stigma with feelings, or we just don't have time for the feelings. We got to go do the thing, and we got to. So giving some space to the feelings and really trying to see them as a form of communication.
Mm.
And so that. And then the third piece, I think, is where we find resistance.
Mm.
And so where are you knowingly avoiding? Where are you knowingly procrastinating? Where are you knowingly, trying to not have that conversation? So again, that's all information,
yeah,
that we can use to start to see that there's work there.
Yeah.
There's something to be known there.
I love this type of conversation, because it's just like you get to really get to the nuts and bolts of becoming the best version of who you are. And that sometimes looks like, girl, I got to work on that. This is,
yes,
I am triggered right now.
Yes.
I need a moment. And it helps us realize that the best version of ourselves sometimes can still be triggered. Like,
sure,
no matter what happens, I think we have this idea that healing looks like a process and then you get to the destination.
An arrival. somewhere.
And then you're like, oh, new Done. Triggers.
Healed.
Right.
Right.
I'm healed.
Yes.
I'm good. And then there's a new trigger and you're like, oh.
Sure.
Still have to work on that.
Sure.
When we think about the work of the inner child, so you gave us the tools of how to start. Mm-hmm. What are some tools of how to continue? If you're re-triggered by those emotions, when those loneliness moments come up for me or anybody, a lot of us feel overlooked and left out because of like social media and the reality sure. that like, you know, every day people are rated by their following, which is insane.
Yes.
I want to get to that part
tough.
Too.
Social media is a tough
It's such
one.
A tough thing yeah. because it didn't exist. These problems did not exist 15 years ago.
It's true. It's true. I think we are maybe trying to catch up in a evolution kind of way, but our brains are really not equipped for the amount of, I think, information and the onslaught of ways that we, even connecting. Yeah. I mean, right? It's hard to think of something really bad about connecting with people, but it's just, there's a level, there's a capacity, I think, that we all have. And another good place to sort of check in with your body and really pay attention to when it's enough. When do you need a social media cleanse? When do you need to disconnect? When is it feeling bad? Like, who are you following? Like, is it fortifying you? Is it fulfilling you? Right. Or do you find like at the end of all of that, you feel really drained and, you know, less of yourself? I think it's something to really pay attention to.
Yeah. And I like, we're going a little off, but I do want to mention, you know, the correlation between the mental health that we see in teenage girls right
100%.
Now worries me so much.
Yeah.
Because I remember when we were coming up, everybody was like, the magazines, the girls see thin girls in the magazines. And they just, but we could close those and put them away. And our parents would be like, first of all, that's not what they look like. And you move on. But with so many images and so much connection and so much disinformation on these websites, I'm sure it is so hard for young teens to navigate. When you run into those situations, like what do you remind parents about that can help them through those difficult times, having a child, teenager navigate social media and how it directly connects to our self-esteem?
Sure. So teen girls are a large part of my client base. So I'm with them every single day. And a lot of what I feel like is at play is this perfect sort of life that they're seeing online, which does not exist in any way, right? But their young brains are developing and there's a lot of comparison going on. And it's so difficult to continue to scroll and see what looks like these infinitely happy, infinitely beautiful images, right? And think like, but I had an algebra test today and it was so hard and I stayed up and, you know, and I don't feel like that. I feel anxious. Mm-hmm. I feel, and so there's this a lot of comparison going on. And then when that's a lot of what you see and then you feel differently, then you start to think, well, so what's wrong with me?
Right.
What is wrong with me? What's going on? It must be me. Right. So I think that's a lot of where it gets really, really harmful for our teen girls. Yeah.
Yeah. It can. And it's so wild that you even say that. And as an adult woman, those are still the same thing.
100%.
Like the comparison. Oh, my gosh. She was on a jet. Like, first of all, we don't know what it took to get to that jet. Second, what does it have to do with like me, my life, like when I really think about it, I'm like, this really doesn't change my day-to-day at all. Like, celebrate, happy for you. This is amazing. But it doesn't change my day-to-day life. But I'm old enough to, like, remember that, to remind myself of that. I worry about teen girls in this generation because, like you said, they're still developing. They're still becoming.
Yes.
And I think there needs to be a study done on how our brains changed as millennials, who literally were the first generation to kind of grow up online, but we still had outside. Like, we had landlines.
100%.
Yeah. We have landlines. We had, you know, AOL. Somebody had to get off the phone.
Yes.
In order to have internet access. Like, we didn't just come into it.
Yeah.
And now the girls and boys and all types of people are coming into this at this very early age with so many messages. And so I know so many of us who don't have children yet are like, how do I even raise a kid in this world? Because it's so
challenging.
Much.
Yeah. It's a wild west of sorts. Yeah. And I think we don't really fully know what the consequences of it, but we're getting there. Yeah. And we know it's harmful. And we know we have to limit it. And we know we need structures and guidelines in place. A friend said the best thing that a parent can do is that time right before you get the first phone. Lay down the guideline, because they're going to say they'll agree to anything get that first phone. So that's when you got to really lay it down right then.
That is so smart.
And put it down right then, right? Because they're like, yes, I'll do that. Yes, I'll do 1 hour. I promise. I'll stick to it. And so that's the time too, because it's so much harder to pull back than it is to just sort of lay it out in the beginning. Yes. And so that's a really, I think, a critical time that parents can implement some really safe strategies to limit.
I love that. Go ahead. Yeah. Y'all heard that, parents. Thank you. Now, okay, back to the inner child work.
Yes.
When we think about the seeds that we plant, it kind of is a segue to this. The seeds that we plant as teenagers, as little girls, they can really be rooted in the foundation of what we believe to about ourselves. Mm-hmm. It leads to, you know, the self-esteem disconnects and all different types of things. But can you give an example of how something that we learned in our childhood could make us feel to bring us to an area of low self-esteem in our adult lives? Maybe something that happened to us as a little girl that we might not have known then. But now, being older, as we're reflecting, that can really be directly correlated to how we show up as adults when it comes to self-esteem, when it comes to feeling good about who we are.
Sure. So something that I see a lot, both in reflecting with adults and also in children, has a lot to do, at least in my experience, with performance.
Ooh, here we go. Let's get to it. this is where it goes.
This is such a layered thing, right? Yeah. So culturally, African-American families have had to rely on education and sort of being in a position to be able to facilitate growth and betterment and all of those kinds of things. And some of that can get rooted and tangled up with performance. Mm. And so, like, the getting of the good grades or getting into the good schools and of course, nothing wrong with that. Yeah. But sometimes what gets lost in that is that there's this tying in with who we are, with what we've done, with our accomplishments or our ability to do well, right? And so as we get a lot of attention for our good grades, or we get rewarded in different ways for doing well in performance spaces, that shows up in our adult life of how are we performing, right? And so our self-esteem can get tangled up with our ability to do things and to do well in certain areas. Mm. And so it's a process to untangle our worth from the things that we're doing, right? And so I think that's one of the more widely seen examples of how that self-esteem and how that self-worth can show up for adults in our adult life.
I'm even paying attention to my body language right now. I'm literally like, Lord, she's coming for me. No, I think that's so true. I mean, you think, I'm sure my parents were like, we're teaching her how to, like, achieve.
Of course.
But I did have a lot of issues with, like, when I started to fail or learn lessons. When you go to college, when you're out of your parents' home, I had trouble recovering because I didn't really ever understand that there was, like, if you don't do well, if you don't make that goal, there's still life after.
Sure.
And you've got to be okay with that version of events. You, like, it just happened that way. you can try again.
Yes.
It'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
For some reason, it did not click. Like, when I was in college, I was like, oh, my God, I got to see. Oh, my God, I have to tell my mom. Oh, my gosh. And it's like,
yeah,
there's another test.
Yes.
There's another lesson.
Well, there's so much wrapped up in our doing well, yeah. right? It opens up resources. It helps us with our futures. Yeah. Our, so there's so much tangled up with it. And of course, our parents love us. If we, you know what I mean? If we don't do well in the test, of course they love us. But, you know, there's so much tied into the doing well that comes out later in life.
Mm.
Yeah.
When we think about the doing well, mm-hmm. and even as grown women, we get to these spaces in our lives. We've got the title, we've got the job, dream job, mm-hmm. the we take care of ourselves, especially a lot of Black women. I mean, I know Black women in this day and age are high earners and,
yes.
you know, leading in business, college degrees, all the different things. But at the end of the day, if someone lets us go or the industry changes or mm-hmm. something happens in our life, all that could be taken away, and then we're left with
ourselves. Yeah.
When yeah. we think about that, those moments in life, if people are reintroducing themselves to themselves, mm-hmm. where do you recommend that they? How do you recommend that process, that work starts? Because a lot of people, especially in this moment where industries are changing,
sure.
and a lot of people have been laid off. For those women especially, what would you say to them about how to reintroduce themselves to the, not what they do, but who they are?
Yeah. So a lot of the work I do, we start sort of with reframing and what's the story you're telling yourself about this, right? So if you were to lose your job or your relationship didn't work out, or what is the story you're telling yourself about that? And so that also goes back to our inner child work around what was the messaging that, right, in the talk we talked about how you absorb things and how things get transmitted to us. So what's the story you're telling yourself about that? Is your worth tied up in that? Did you make the right choices? Like, we start to sort of go back and, well, should I have made that decision? And was it that choice? And where did I go wrong? I wasn't prepared enough. And it gets tied up with, is the story that I failed in some way, right? And so is failure attached to the outcome? And what do we know about failure, right? Is it failure not a good thing? Because like, I'm trying to really talk to people, and especially my teenagers and young ones, about, oh, wow, you know, what did that look like? And was that a fail?
Yeah.
I had a mentor who was an educator and worked with little ones. I don't know if I told you the story before. Worked with little ones. And in her classroom, when the kids would make a mistake, she reframed that as opportunities. Mm. And I love the story because she would have little 6 and 7 year olds say, I'm having an opportunity.
That's so
right?
cute.
And so, like, how do we think about that? Mm. How do we think about the losing of the job, right? Disappointing,
yeah.
right? Hard, difficult, not any one of those things, but also, okay, so now what do I do with that? How could this be my opportunity? What is this propelling me toward, right? We started this conversation with a prayer.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you want from me in this moment?
Yeah.
Where do you need me to move toward, right? And so I think trying to reframe the narrative around those really difficult times is part of the shift. I start to want to think about and just how we're thinking about it.
Oh, I think that's so powerful. This is an opportunity. I think you mentioned it, but I always like to hear that story.
Yeah.
Because it really is an opportunity. It's a new way to say, hey, this is a moment I don't know what's going to happen.
Yes.
But what do I know this time around? We always move through life and learn new things.
Sure.
You have new connections. You have new industry relationships. Hopefully, if you had a, you know, reputation that went well, hopefully you're able to, you know, meet with people and, you know, reach out to people. And if you
sure.
did, if something went wrong, maybe that's a time for us to reflect
Self-reflection.
On.
Self-reflection. Yep.
how I can grow here, how right. I can move here. I think that's so important. Y'all, we opportunities.
Opportunities. Lessons. Right? Opportunities. And you got there one time, yeah. right? So there's the evidence that you can get there again, right? So there's evidence happening, right? And so, again, reframing how we're thinking about it.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. I love that. When we think about the reframing, it makes me think about the re-raising that we kind of have to tap into when we are in our healing journey. We recognize where patterns might have been super triggering for us and where we might have felt alone or dismissed or had real trauma and pain in our childhoods that have led us to these versions of who we are. Mm-hmm. And now we have to do the work to kind of take ourselves to a different space.
Yeah.
What is the work? Like, is re-raising an actual, like, thing? Is that an actual, because, like, I just be saying it and I've heard it, people say it, but, like, is that an actual thing, a practice? Like, you can kind of re-raise or introduce that,
sure.
that
reparent
relationship.
Sometimes is language reparent. That is used, yeah. right? So I sort of like to think about it as you become your young self's companion, right? And so it's people sit on various spaces around, like, go all in and this be your inner child yes. and all that. And some people are like, yeah, I'm not really buying all of that. Yeah. And so people sit in various places on that sort of spectrum. But I sort of like to think about with clients that you become the companion of that young self, right? And so getting more in an aware space around what she needed, right? And that takes work.
Yeah.
That takes work because there can be really painful moments. There can be painful, a whole season of hurt around where your child was. I mean, personally, I spent a lot of time you said compartmentalizing. For me, it was more like a sort of dissociation from that. And so sort of a pretending that I wasn't in pain around those missed opportunities or those hurts or those places that I needed someone to really show up for me. And I really just had myself, right? So I think going back and really trying to explore that, I think that's where, you know, I'm going to advocate for therapy, yeah. right? But have somebody with you on that journey. But going back and really trying to appreciate what that little girl needed or little boy needed in that time, right? And being okay with the scariness of that and the fear of that and the anger of that. Like, what were you grown-ups doing? I needed someone at this time. You know, what were you – hello, I needed you to – I needed a hug. I needed you to show up for me. I needed you to not make my grades so important. Yeah. I needed you – so allowing that little person to – fully express and validate what you're finding that she needs, right? And then, like you're saying, being more mindful when that comes up and really, really walking with her on that journey. I talk to my little person, right? Like, so, wow, I can see you're really scared right now, or I can see you're feeling really lonely, and I can understand that. One of the phrases that I tell my parents I work with that is so empowering is to tell your child, it makes total sense that you would feel that way. I mean, because we are quick to, as parents or even, you know, as even not parents, to tell ourselves, let's get on with it. Like, let's solve this problem. Let's move through it. But just giving space to say, like, wow, I could see how you really feel that way. Or it makes sense that that would really be hurtful or disappointing. And so giving space to that, we can be quick to move to the lesson or to the solution. And so giving a little space there, I think, is really important. And then seeing how you can provide support around that. Okay, go get with my girls so I can not feel isolated or lonely in this moment. Or I'm going to really indulge and go hard on my self-care right now because I need to feel comforted. Yes. I need some comfort right now. And that's what's coming up for me.
Mm, that all makes me so happy. Because there's when the inner child version of me like is the loudest and the most triggered, I do try not to go into like shutdown mode. For me, that looks like binging Netflix for way too long. I've watched this show before. What am I actually doing? What am I avoiding? Sometimes I give myself time to just avoid because I think, excuse me, Lord, this cough will not leave me. Okay. Well, I think that sometimes the work of just being on all the time, sometimes I do need time to just be like, D&D on my phone.
Yes.
Turn on something I got to think about. Let me watch the Parkers again for the 15th time. Yeah. And I'll just like laugh and be, you know, the version of me that in 2002 or 2003 didn't have any worries. And then I'm like, okay, but sometimes that looks like a little too long. Let me tap back in now and get back into that. But there's so much beauty in what you just said about the re-raising, the reparenting ourselves and being who we needed at that time. I think that's really powerful that we have the agency to tap back into that version of ourselves, that we can't leave that little girl behind. I think that's really powerful to hear.
I think not only like reparenting her, right, but also even trying to get underneath that and who was she before the hurt or who was she before that thing happened? Because like I was a silly kind of very light little girl. Yeah. And over time I got more serious, more composed, tighter, right? And so not just like how do I reparent and start to heal those hurt parts, but how do I tap back into who I was even previous to that? More of like authentic is a little bit of an overused word, but like my really unique self. And I try to let her express herself in moments when I can just like, okay, go with it. Don't overthink it. Go. And that looks like jumping on the bed with my kids or wake up, you guys, we're going to do a donut run. Oh. Like, you know, like that's part of my little girl personality. Yeah. And that can get sort of, I don't know, kind of tamped down in the busyness of life. And also, oh, well, you know, you're a grown professional woman. Right. Where is the space? Silly. Don't be silly. No, be silly. Be silly. Play. Yeah. Like play is a really, I think, an important part of who we all need to be. Yeah. So
I love that you get to do that with your kids. Yeah. I'm like, I think that's so important to be around younger energy sometimes because it makes you realize that you are this very stiff version of who you used to be. And like even watching old videos of myself, I will see I was a ham. I would just be in the camera, just acting up. And like I'm like, oh, I'm still in the camera. And sometimes I still act up. But I've learned like, oh, just be silly sometimes.
Yeah, there's a playfulness to your energy that I think people really love.
Yeah.
And so we can get in our heads about, oh, that's not professional or that's not.
No, because not everybody likes it. But I'm like, you'd be all right.
But that's okay. Right. You know, that's okay. I say I'm not everyone's cup of tea and that's okay. Right. That's okay.
I love this. Okay. So for the inner girl exercises, let's say that there's someone who is here watching like me. I don't have kids. I don't have a man yet. We're working on it. What are maybe some dates or some opportunities or ways that she can tap into or he can tap into the inner child version of themselves, maybe by themselves, solo time? What does that look like?
Sure. So, again, I'm going to like circle back to the body.
Yes.
Like it provides such information. So when you go on a girl's night and you come home and your body is like, I want more of that, right? That's a lot of information that you need to use to tap back in. There's something about that that feels really good. there's maybe you love alone time. Like, that's a thing too. Like, so pay attention to that. And so really awareness, I feel like, is like the theme of tapping back into your little girl, and paying attention to what really fortifies you, what doesn't. When do you leave a space and feel super drained, super kind of like, huh? Like, that didn't turn out the way I thought it was going to be, or what it, like, that's important too, to pay attention to that. So I think that that awareness and really noticing piece is the key.
I love that. And so when we are those, like, say if it's not a girl's night, if you want to take yourself out, maybe doing something like an activity that you used to like to do as a child, is that like a good way to...
Of course. Yeah. Like, that whole exploration process to me is self-care. And so just if you feel curious about something, there's something to be known about that. And so try it. Try it, right? And I'm speaking to myself too, right? Because that's where my... lack of adventure self comes in, that self that doesn't want to make a mistake, that self that doesn't want to do it wrong, that self that, like, someone's going to tell me why I shouldn't have been doing that in the first place, right? And so, but get curious, like, get in relationship with your little girl. Like, be in relationship together. What do you feel? Oh, I hear you this or that. That feels interesting. Okay, nope, didn't like that, right? Or that person's energy, it feels familiar to me in a way that does not make me feel good. That's to be known, right? And to be in awareness about.
Ooh, that's a good point. That person's energy does not make me feel good. Another thing I'm learning to do is honoring that. That part of me that's like, I came out the womb, apparently I was a very shady baby. I was my mom tells me all the time, my mother is a social butterfly, so she's the woman in the room that's like, hey, how you doing, nice to see you. And here she came with me, this child that was like,
what are we doing here?
Who are you? Like, apparently I was like that with family, friends, anyone. It was very hard for her. And she did learn, she did teach me that, one, how to, like, be nicer, kinder to people, but also, you know, it did become a performative part of my personality where, like, I make sure that everybody in the room is good. So sometimes I'm trying to honor the version of me, the baby version. Like, forget the little girl. The little girl was spanked to be nice. You know, you can't do that, right? Okay. Like, you can't can't go in a room and be mean to people. You're not rolling your eyes at people, which I get. My mom wanted me to be safe in a space. She didn't want me to be ostracized because of that part of my personality. I don't really know that part of my personality well.
Anymore.
She comes out, because I'll be at like restaurants sometimes and I'll be like,
so here's how I would reframe that. So I would want to explore with you if there was, in any way, could we talk about that little girl being cautious versus kind of like stink eye kind of that, but like just that. Like, I was cautious and I really wanted to observe the room before I made any decisions about people. And I really wanted to pick up on the social cues before I knew who felt safe to me and who didn't. And so that's what I mean by reframing and having different language with yourself, because where you move from there will be totally different. If you're like, I was just this when I walked in a room, then you have a totally different idea of that little girl. Then my little girl was very cautious and she was always at work to protect me and keep me safe and help me know who was someone who was going to be with me or somebody who wasn't. And so just even in the language that we talk to ourselves about.
That's so good. That's so good. I had to have a very real conversation with myself and my family over Christmas break. And this is why we get into real therapy.
This is always on the holidays.
Okay, the holidays. But, like, one of my family members, like, recalled, I'm from the DMV, and I'm very much aware that my community is riding with me and proud of mm-hmm. me and supportive of me. And then, you know, there are people that sometimes just say things like, well, you was a bad kid. So, you know, okay, I'm yeah. surprised that you got here. And I was like, yeah. well, no, like I was not a bad kid. Like there are kids that like spent time really, really, like when I think of a bad kid of how I, first of all, I don't believe they're bad children, but when I think of a kid that made a lot of mistakes that really, you know, really tried were disobedient to parents. Like yeah. I really tried to respect my authority. I don't know if I did it well mm-hmm, all the time, mm-hmm. but like I did my best. And one of my family members is like, yeah, I can't believe she made it here because she was a bad kid. And that really threw me.
Yeah,
like,
I was bet. Like,
you thought I was a bad kid. Like I yeah. was a bad kid. And I asked my mom and she was like, I mean, you ain't really listen. You just did what you wanted to do. So I had to, through therapy, really sit with that, why it triggered me. Because I was yeah. like, okay, I can understand why they might say that I didn't listen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can also thank that version of me for becoming an entrepreneur. If yeah. I followed every rule, I would not be the entrepreneur, journalist, person that I am now. Yeah. So I wanted to honor that part of me. But it did really hurt my feelings when yeah. I heard that.
Yeah.
And I was just like,
yeah.
I wasn't an easy child, but I don't know that I was a bad kid.
So, you know, I have issue with that language.
I know.
You know, I do I know. Have issue with that language because I'm always trying to think about a child's behavior yeah. as communication.
Mm.
And so for me, I'm trying to talk to parents about like these ideas we have about what child's behavior is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And again, really layered conversation because parents, especially Black parents, especially parents of color, yeah. and I make that distinction, a lot of what drove their parenting styles was keeping their children safe and alive.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So a child that didn't listen is a child who put themselves in harm's way. So the listening and the compliance part of parenting is, I think, really rooted in a parent's desire to keep their children safe most of the time, right?
And when we think about Black parents
yes.
and Black parents in America.
Yeah, then and now, yeah.
That's even deeper.
Yes.
Like from slavery.
Oh, yeah.
On down.
Like, you have to listen because I'm trying to keep you alive, right? And you can't really explain that to your 7-year-old or even your 12-year-old maybe. But, like, it's, I think, largely rooted in fear of harm, right? So that's a really big component that we have to stay mindful about, right? That's when we talk about we're not indicting parents, yes. right? But also, again, I'm reframing your behavior to the person who was ready to try new things and the person who was saying, like, I'm ready for my autonomy. Like, I don't need you to tell me how to do this. Yeah. I'm going to try something, yeah. right? So that's the kid who's maybe not listening.
Yeah.
The kid who has really big ideas about what they want to do or they want to try handling something and the parent's like, I'm not ready for you to try that,
ooh.
Right? But we are not our children. They are separate from us,
yeah.
and we have to let them have their own experiences mm-hmm. and know that they are not just extensions of us. They're separate, and it's hard, super hard.
I know, because it's
super hard.
When I think about, like, I have dreams about my future kids just in my mind, like, ooh, I hope that they want this. But then I'm like, oh, no, I don't know who these little yes. people are going to come into the world and want to be.
Right.
And that's exciting to me. And I love that you said that. It made me start tearing up. I've never heard it that way. The autonomy part of that is yeah. so freeing
yeah.
for me. Like, I, especially even in that conversation, you learn to be like, hey, y'all say what y'all say. You got to be who you are no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really needed to hear that, like, that version of me was just ready to explore.
Yes.
Ready to be out in the world.
In the world. Try stuff. And autonomy, children's autonomy is an absolutely normal part of their development. Mm. So they are trying to, you know, we say in therapy talk, individuate. Mm. And so they're trying to gain separateness from their parents. And parents aren't always ready for it. Yeah. It can always, maybe it's not safe in the way that they want to do it. So there's just, you know, there's work to be done around that piece. But I mean, I can picture you. I can picture you as a young person, ready to, and I can almost bet that you were like, well, why?
Right.
Yeah. Well, how come? Like, I want to understand that. Yes. Right. And parents are like, cause I said so. Right. And
got that
so,
a lot. I had that conversation.
Right. And so that's a, we're working. We're yes. working toward parenting where why isn't synonymous with me disrespecting you. Mm. I'm curious. Mm. Let me be curious. Tell me. Help me understand that, right? But oftentimes those whys or how come or I don't want to is interpreted as disrespect or being bad. Mm. And it really is just so developmentally appropriate.
Mm. There's just so much calmness. Your voice is my favorite. I can listen to you talk all day. I even think about some of my friends and our conversations about just the inner child versions of us and even the sadness that comes up when we think about who we were as little girls and the ways that we developed these bad habits or these habits that we want to change in our life. Mm-hmm. I'm learning the bad wording. These habits that we want to change in our life. So we touched a little bit about autonomy and independence and how mm-hmm. that might look like disobedience in a child. We talked a little bit about self-esteem and how that leads to certain behaviors. Sure. When we think about anger,
yeah,
which is not really like a topic that we talk about a lot. We kind of dismiss it as mm-hmm. like a, you, she's an angry black woman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What are some things that you've seen that happened to little black girls that made them angry black women? And like, I know that's a deep question.
Yeah.
We got time. But tell me, like, maybe some of those, like, really, that can touch here, like some of those common themes that we've seen.
Sure. So anger is one of those emotions that is just, it's a tough one.
Yeah.
Because it's as normal an emotion as all the others, but it gets a bad rap. And people are accustomed to containing it and denying it. And so I think we have, you know, a society that has a lot of anger about a lot of different things and we don't know how to express it, right? But there's a very healthy and safe way of having and expressing anger, and we should.
Mm.
And so let me think about a way that, one sort of easy go-to is when you're not allowed to have feelings. Mm. That's angering, right? And so when you tell me, I mean, one of the phrases that I got from my parenting a lot was, don't stop crying about that. Right. And so something about like the cry or the response to whatever was going on, I wasn't allowed to have my emotion around it. And so that can lead to anger, right? Because you're telling me that what I'm feeling is not okay. Mm. You're telling me it's not valid. And there's nowhere for me to go with that except for to just hold it.
Ooh.
And it just builds, right? And that can come out as anger. Mm. And so a lot of times what comes out as anger is really an accumulation of a lot of different emotions, right? And so anger is a tricky one. And I talk a lot about with parents, okay, so yes, we don't want throwing things and hitting and we don't want that, but we have to find some healthy ways to be able to let people express their anger because it's real. And it is, it sounds a little wacky, but anger is a worthy emotion to have.
Mm. Can you break that down a little bit more?
Yeah.
Worthy emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never even heard that before. What are worthy emotions and why is anger a worthy emotion?
Yeah. So they're all worthy, yeah. right? And so we have a spectrum of emotions because they are part of the human experience. Yeah. So, you know, we get the, like, the good emotions and the bad emotions, or the ones that are okay to have and the ones that aren't. And really, it's just such a it's such a difficult place to be in the human experience, when you're thinking that some of them are the ones that you should have and some of the ones that you aren't. Mm. And so I really try to, one, provide a space for my clients to, one, even identifying anger and naming it, right? So just saying, I am angry about that, right? And that comes up a lot in reparenting our children. I am angry that I did not get what I needed, and that is real. Mm. And so providing a space where we can say it, knowing that it's valid, identifying it, so recognizing it when it's happened, and then what can we do with it? What can we do with that anger in a healthy way?
Mm. Yeah. I love that. And I love that you brought up that point about, I needed this, but I didn't get it in childhood. But I'm grown now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us are having conversations with our parents are in real time yeah. as really grown people. Like, hey, I really needed this from you. Mm-hmm. And you fell short here. Sometimes that leads to anger from them. You know, they're like, I gave you.
I know you're not telling me right.
Yeah. In a black household.
Yes.
You had food. You had shelter. You had school. And in my household, you had private school, educate, and never yes. needed nothing. We went to Jamaica Chow.
Yes.
So, like, I've yes. had to have those conversations with my parents
yeah.
on, you know, just like, I really would have liked this, and I really wanted to know, you know, that you still saw me even in the midst of, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that I am the oldest, that not my title being, like, how you treated me, but, like, just Gia being yeah. Gia, being totally okay as just being a kid. And it has definitely led to some tough moments, but mm-hmm. then I give myself grace for both sides, because mm-hmm. I'm like, I give myself grace for my mom and my dad, because I'm like, they didn't know how to, like, there's no sure. blueprint on sure. raising a kid in the 90s. Like, yeah. what do? You don't know. And they had three kids under five. Like, my God, yes. like, good.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot. And yeah. they were like 30, early 30s. I'm 33 now. I got three plants under five that I can barely keep up alive. You know, so I'm just doing my best to do that.
Sure.
So I give myself grace and I give my parents grace. But for those of us who are dealing with two truths, I needed that as a child. But as an adult, my relationship with my parents is amazing. I don't mm-hmm. want to mess it up. Mm-hmm. Should we still have the conversation? Should we honor our child in private? What would you say to a person yeah. that's trying to navigate that space?
Yeah, it's such a good point, because I think some parents are available to talk about that kind of thing and yeah. some really just aren't.
Yeah.
And you really have to know.
Yeah.
For some parents, that's just too difficult a territory, or they are not emotionally available to have those kinds of conversations. And that's hard, because we want to sort of go back and explore, and maybe, like you're saying, like, learn more. Like, I want to talk to you about this, and I want to hear more about what it was for you. And I want to tell you how it feels like it impacted me. And so, you know, knowing if your family, your parents, your caregivers are available for that kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. And then your approach, it is important, the same way that a parent's, I tell parents, you know, your tone, just your tone and your words goes such a long way. And so as you maybe approach parents or caregivers who you want to explore these kind of things with, if you go in with a, you know, I have been, and I'm making this up right now, I have been thinking about these things and maybe parts of my early life that were hard for me. Yeah. And I want to talk with you about them. And I don't want to blame you, but I want to have like an open dialogue. Do you think that we could do that? And, you know, when it feels hard, you can tell me and we can stop. We can create our own pace around this. And so going in with, like you're saying, some compassion for both sides, I think that'll sort of hopefully set the stage for what the sort of maybe goal around it is and what is just to like learn more and deepen the relationship. And that's sort of
the goal,
yeah. Right? The goal, right? And so another thing that I tell parents is there's so much power in your willingness to repair. Ooh. So much power in that. You know, I was sharing with my daughter, I had to do it last night, yeah. Right? She was, let me see, how much of her business am I going to share with
right,
you?
Right, that's what like, I was like, I'm always like, look, I don't say too much.
Let's see. So
I'm going to have to ask my mom before this comes out.
She was feeling anxious about something. Yeah. And I felt like I sort of had it under control and I wanted her to just trust me and not be anxious around it because I got it. I got you. Right. When have I not got you? Mm-hmm. Like just, and she was, and I could feel myself getting really impatient around that. I could feel myself wanting to be like, look, I'm the parent here. I know what's going on. Like, right. So like, let's go. Let's see. We're wasting our time here. Right. And so I could feel that happening. And I did. I got impatient and she did sort of like a never mind. Mm-hmm. And she went to her room. And, you know, it took me 5 minutes to know, like, oh, I blew that. Right. Like, oh, I blew that one, right? She needed me to show up for her in a different way. She needed me to say, gosh, I can see you were feeling really anxious about this. Is there something I can do to help you not feel so anxious? And instead, you know, again, I was impatient and she went to her room and I was like, okay, what am I going to do about this, right? Mm-hmm. And so I went into her room and I said, I didn't do that very well. And I said, can I start over? And so she said, it's okay, never mind. And I know she meant that never mind, but there could be a piece of that interaction that she could take with her. My mom was not available for me in times when I was anxious. And so I said, yeah, I know, but like, let's just talk about it for a minute if you're up for it. And so I said, you know, tell me, is there a way I could have done that better? And she said, well, you got a little bit strong in the way you said that. And so I said, I hear that. And I'm sorry that I wasn't more gentle in understanding where you were at. Yeah. And I'll try to do better next time.
I love that.
Right?
Thank you for sharing that story. Shout out to your daughter for even knowing to be like, yeah, that was a little... That's amazing.
That was harsh. Yes. Like you said that there was some, you know, there was some spice on that, mom, you know, and could you have done that? But, you know, hopefully in that I'm modeling for her that, you know, her feelings were valid in the moment. What she took away from that was valid. And I'm trying to repair and not just say like, yeah, sorry, but like I make mistakes. We have feelings about it. I had a feeling about it. Yeah. And like, and how can you advocate and say, yeah, I didn't like that. And so next time, hopefully, right, we'll come to each other quicker.
Yes.
Right. But also, when she gets into her first relationship, when she's in this friend group that is important to her, or when she's in this friend group that's like a little bit sort of like maybe they're the cool girls right. and she wants to stick around, you know, or whatever, she can advocate for herself in those moments too, mm-hmm. right? Because if you're a parent and your little one is trying to speak up, and you're saying, no, but I'm the parent. No, but this. They're not going to know how to advocate outside of that space. They're not going to advocate in the relationship. They're not going to advocate at their job. Mm-hmm. They're not going to advocate on their sports team. They're odd because you've told them that when they begin to advocate, there's no room for that. Mm. So, you know.
Ooh, that's so true. Like, I mean, I was just thinking about that in terms of my upbringing and learning that, like, I had to, there is a part of life where you are expected to obey every single rule.
Yes.
And then there's a part of life where you're expected to learn to know how to be a grown woman that obviously knows how to speak up for yourself. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Where was the transition? Right. Who said that?
That's
and then,
right.
you know, at some point you learn to tap in with that version of yourself to not dishonor her. And you learn how to speak to people. Tone is very important. I really love that takeaway.
Sure.
But sometimes that happens and you're like, no one ever taught me how to do that.
Yeah.
I wasn't taught how to advocate for myself. And luckily, I didn't have a problem advocating for myself and telling people how I felt.
That's good.
I got in trouble for it a lot.
Yeah.
But I learned how to, you know, navigate both sides. But I want to go back to, because there is a part of that first question, and I know we're running low on time. I'm aware, but this is getting so good. Mm-hmm. So there's a part of this question, a part of that question that you responded and said, sometimes you will have emotionally unavailable parents, and you'll just have to be okay with that, or learn how to navigate that reality in those moments, because a lot of people do have parents who are just not open to having the talk, not open to having that discussion. What would you recommend people tell their inner child who didn't get what they needed then and might not get what they need now about how to deal with this so it doesn't, if it re-triggers them, they know how to handle it a little better?
Sure. So I wanna sort of dispel this idea that you can't have the healing unless you have an emotionally available parent to sort of undo. Mm. So it's still available to you, right? Because most of the work you're doing with yourself, your own reparenting, right? So, but great if you have a parent who's willing to have those kinds of conversations. I would say that probably it would help facilitate that healing if you could go back and that there's someone who's willing to sort of listen now and hear your perspective. I think the word that maybe we haven't touched on is there is a somewhat of a grieving process around that little girl who didn't get what she needed, right? And so there's grief work in that. Right. And so there is perhaps when you don't have an emotionally available parent, there's grief in that. There's sadness in that. Right. My father passed away when I was in my very early 20s. And so I wasn't even aware enough to have a conversation with him at that time if I had been able to. Mm. And so I've had to move through that without even the ability to do that. So I say that to say, don't feel like you can't do this work if your parent is not or your caregiver is not available. You absolutely can. It will just be a different route.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what does that route look like? I mean, obviously getting into therapy.
Therapy is helpful.
But if you can't afford
You can. I don't even want to say that. I mean, great if you can do it in therapy because it can. You can have someone to sort of be with you in the journey. But I don't even want to say that because there's so many of us who do not have the resources, right? And, you know, like eating well is costly. Being in therapy is costly. Isn't like all of those things require resources that some people do not have. A lot of people do not have. And even people who have resources still feel a lot of stigma and shame around therapy. And so I don't want to make that like this obstacle that if you can't sort of get over, then, you know, healing is not available to you.
Yeah.
Right. So, I'm going to just keep going back to this idea of starting to pay attention and validate your experience where your triggers are. Your triggers are information. They are not obstacles. You're not sort of, let's not be in opposition to them. Mm. Let's sort of, I have a client even that we talk about, like, you know, what are your friend triggers saying today? You know, like you're starting to be, reframe that and being in like, okay, what are you saying to me? What is this communication about? And so starting to really look at where those triggers are and trying to find the origins of them. So what is that anger about? When do I feel that? Where is there a pattern around that? Is there a pattern around when someone tries to tell me, no, I can't do something? Mm-hmm. Is there a pattern around that when I'm in performance spaces? You know, I'm not a super big fan of the imposter syndrome idea, but it's real, yes. Right? And so where is that coming up and what does that really mean? Like, do I belong here? A yes. Belonging, like, is that the sort of themes that are coming up? So looking at those themes and triggers, I think there's lots of information in there.
Mm. I love that. I could talk to you for hours, quite literally. I'm going to have you back. Love that you're in LA.
Yes. So yes.
I think I have one or two more questions because this is such a great part. The grieving is so real. Mm-hmm. The grieving process is not easy, and yeah. We can have a whole separate conversation about that.
Yeah.
But with the conclusion of this conversation in particular, I know it's a lot of women who never really thought about this work, who might not even understand like what this work really means and why it's important. Mm-hmm. So when you go on in life dismissing the inner girl version of you that needs you to pay attention to her, mm-hmm. What might happen? What happens if you don't pay attention to that version of you?
Yeah, it's a great, great question. And I think it is, to me, it's the why, because all of that sort of emotional inheritance, all of those experiences, all of those ways that we got wounded and didn't get what we need, they're at play all the time.
Yeah.
So they're in all the thoughts, they're in all the feelings, they're in what we say, what the choices we make. It's ever, ever present. And so there is the difference between it running us and us being in consciousness around it.
Mm.
And so, you know, you can say what you want to say about therapy or your inner child, or if that feels a little bit too, you know, crunchy granola for you, but it's ever present. And so if we're not in awareness around it, it really is running us. Mm. And so when you maybe are, I don't know, in your work scenario, and it's really difficult for you to be in a team situation, or you always feel like people are against you, or you're never getting the accolades, or, you know, whatever the scenario is, or in your parenting where you feel like, you know, your child is constantly pushing your buttons or what, all of that is how it's showing up, right? And in relationships, a big one, like that's where we get relationships and parenting. I mean, your triggers are just running wild.
I mean, it's a mirror.
Running You're wild.
Like, what did I ask you?
But the good news around that is that it's all the ways that we can know that we're being called to grow, right? So we're being called to move forward in that, or you know, or step back and sort of letting us run the show.
I love this. Thank you for the call to grow. That's so good. Okay, so Heather, I want you to do me a little exercise favor.
Okay.
I know there's a lot of girls here that want to grow and continue to grow. That's why they come to Healed Girl Era.
Yes.
And some people might be afraid to go back to any part of their life, any era of their life, but especially the little girl era.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could talk directly to the camera
and
say to any young woman or older woman that needs help to get back to their inner girl era, just some thoughts around not being afraid to revisit that version of themselves to move forward into a more healed version of who they are now.
Yeah. Let me think about that. Yeah. So, and in the camera too. Let me think. So I guess I would say that going back to that inner child part of you can be very scary. It absolutely can, and hard, right? We have varying degrees of wounding that we experience in our young lives. But there is really richness in there, and there is the truth of who you are in there. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage people to go at a pace that feels manageable, right? You're running your own race. So go at a pace that feels really manageable and take your time and know that it will be scary at some parts of it, but also know that there's really a lot of reward in there. There's a lot of reward, and there's a lot of knowingness and a lot of ways that you're going to begin to show up for yourself that you didn't even know was available to you. And so I guess that would be my suggestion.
I love that. Yeah. You gotta go on, girl. I love it. We always give our guests flowers, and my beautiful assistant on set, my producer, Chanel,
thank
is
you.
Here. And this is no different. We want to thank you so much for your
thank
work.
Thank you.
In all the ways you show up for
it.
Us. This is a huge flower bouquet that
gorgeous,
you can take home to
gorgeous.
Yourself. Shout out to Sunny's flowers. But I want you to know that you deserve all the good things coming to you. The work
thank
that you're doing,
you.
The conversations you're having, the rooms that you're having them in, I think is going to break chains in business, in personal lives, in rooms where women might not have felt safe before,
yeah.
now have a safer understanding of themselves and what's possible for them. So just thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you
for always just being yourself. Thank you for, I just think that God anointed you so perfectly to deal with like children and families, because your voice is just so beautiful and so kind. And so I'm just so grateful you exist, and just thank you for all that you do and all that you are.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate those kind words. And back at you.
Thank you. I really
appreciate you for having this forum for people.
Of course. And is there anywhere we can tell people if they want to connect with you more?
Sure. Yeah. So the name of my practice is called Small Seed Therapy.
Love.
You mentioned seeds,
yes.
Planting small seeds. And our website is smallseedtherapy.com. And go there. Check it out. Reach out. Yeah.
Reach out. Heather Primus is here. Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of Healed Girl Era, the podcast. Be sure to subscribe. You're here. Might as well subscribe, share, rate, like, and be back with us for the next episode. And good luck to you on your era, your inner girl healing, all the ways that you are showing up for yourself. You got this. We know you got this.
You got this.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!